Katie Welch has one of the coolest jobs ever. How many people get to call Selena Gomez their boss? Katie is the chief marketing officer of Rare Beauty, the top-selling celebrity beauty brand that has over 63 million likes on TikTok alone. Katie is refreshingly open, honest, and candid about the reality of growing your career in the ever-changing landscape of marketing and how mentorship and relationships were key to her growth. This conversation with Katie has been a year in the making. As always, it's Avery, your host, and today I'm joined with Liz, Girlboss's general manager, and Victoria, Girlboss's senior writer, here to debrief this episode.
Yeah, a little behind the scenes peek at Girlboss Radio is sometimes when we invite a guest on, it doesn't happen for a year. Sometimes they say yes, and it still just never comes to pass. The episode, for whatever reason, just doesn't happen. Schedules change. Katie is a very busy executive. So yes, it took a year. Katie finally came back to us, which we're so grateful to have this really fun, really candid conversation. I think there's so many lessons that we can learn from marketing pros like Katie that apply to all kinds of different roles and levels and career phases.
And it's such a misunderstood field too. I feel like marketing, especially going viral with a beauty brand on TikTok, it seems like overnight, but I have attempted that same thing with a small business and failed miserably. So yeah, it obviously is a misunderstood field and it's so important to hear from women like Katie who are doing it so well.
I spent most of my career working in tech, and I think that a lot of people don't necessarily give marketing pros the credit that they deserve for how many skills they're constantly having to pick up and reinvent and evolve. Having worked in tech, I worked with a lot of engineers, and they would oftentimes talk about how they were constantly learning new languages, new code, new tech. And with marketing, I think it's the same, but like 10x in terms of the type of growth. We have new platforms that are being introduced basically on like a yearly basis, and then these platforms are changing their algorithm, what feels like daily. So it's really hard to keep up. So I have a lot of appreciation and respect for folks that really rise to the top in their career in marketing. It's definitely an art and a science from my perspective.
Yeah, you need to have a lot of stamina and a lot of curiosity and not be tied to doing things the same way. And I think what's really interesting is, and Katie talks about this a little bit in the episode, is we are in the age of the celebrity beauty brand. Serena Williams just came out with one about a month ago. And what Katie says is, it doesn't matter if you're a celebrity or not, if you're going to launch a beauty brand or any brand for that matter, it has to have a really strong why. And yes, I'm sure we can attribute much of the success of Rare Beauty to Selena Gomez's megawatt superstar power. And she was pretty early to the celebrity beauty thing as well. When you talk to Katie and when you realize like the work that she does, her work is to bottle that magic, bottle that star power and actually channel it into sales and revenue and a viable brand. And really, I don't think that a celebrity beauty brand could be successful and thriving without those really key, talented, behind-the-scenes marketing folks to just make magic, really.
One thing that I was really surprised about was how open and honest Katie was with us about her working relationship with Selena and how involved Selena is. We've had conversations with a lot of celebrities on this podcast. I've also had a lot of conversations that have worked alongside celebrities, and it's very rare that they, no pun intended, get into like the details about the working relationship with the person that they're supporting and collaborating with. So I thought that that was really interesting, and I was really happy that she was just super open and honest about that dynamic.
And as a TikTok obsessive beauty consumer like myself, I feel like I only buy products based on what I see on TikTok, based on, again, enough influencers are showing me reviews of stuff or like hauls that I'm like, okay, no, I do need this Rare Beauty blush or like this Rare Beauty highlight. And another thing I wanted to shout out, which is really cute, is they just recently launched dog toys in the shape of their Rare Beauty blush and mascara. And so obviously as a dog mom, I'm like, do I need this? And again, it's nothing super revolutionary. It's just something I've never seen another beauty brand do. And I was like, I need this for my dog.
Yeah. And then they were smart enough to send it to TikTok famous pet influencers, right? And so you've had the crossover of pet talk with beauty talk. And it's like, again, it took a marketing person. It took an idea in a boardroom. It took a team brainstorming to make that happen.
Katie, she has a pretty big following on TikTok on her own personal account. So the day that we're recording this, it's about 96.6 thousand. So it's honestly amazing because she's one of the only people that I can think of in the C-suite of like a major brand that has that big of an audience. And on her personal page, she pulls back the curtain on her job as well as provides really relatable career advice.
She's also just like an awesome human being. When we met a year ago, her and I initially vibed and started talking about all things like dating and our personal life and work. And we've been connected ever since and going back and sharing little kudos and supporting each other in our DMs. She is just like a breath of fresh air. It's very rare that we meet I keep saying rare, which is so funny. She's really one of a kind.
That is funny. Yeah, we're so excited to have this chat.
Katie, welcome to Girl Boss Radio. I am very excited to have this conversation with you today. And I think that I would love to start off just by congratulating you on being included in Forbes 2024 Entrepreneurial CMO 50.
Thank you. My gosh. First of all, thank you so much. I'm so excited to have this chat with you. And yes, that was such an amazing, lovely surprise. So thanks for noticing.
And where did you start your career off in marketing?
My very first job out of college was at the Macy's Buyer Training Program. I was an English major. I knew that I wanted to go into something in fashion and beauty. I really wanted to be a magazine editor. I had interned at Marie Claire in the 90s and loved it. But then when I was interviewing for jobs, and I was interviewing all over the place, just anything that I could get my hands on. And thankfully, I was able to interview at Macy's and I got the job. And it was this wonderful buyer training program because coming out of college, I didn't know anything about the retail landscape, retail math. I just knew Jane Austen and Emily Brontë, really. So it was a great sort of primer for my career. And I had seen Rachel on Friends. She was a buyer. And I was like, I want to do that.
Stop.
And let me tell you, it's not as glamorous as they make it look. You're very much in front of an Excel sheet behind a computer. But I always still loved beauty. And I missed the editorial side of things, the storytelling. I was a writer in college. Someone introduced to me the idea of PR. I didn't know what PR was. And they thought, oh, maybe you would love PR because it's still working with the editorial side, but it's also you're representing brands. You understand a bit more of the business. And so that piqued my interest. This was 24 years ago. My first beauty PR job was at Victoria's Secret Beauty, working with Giselle and Adriana Lima and launching the Victoria's Secret pink fragrances. Very sexy for him, very sexy for her. Whole different era, but that's how I started. And then just worked my way up through PR agencies and brands and then got into marketing and the rest is history.
Yeah. And now you're the CMO at Rare Beauty. You're in your Rare Beauty era.
Rare Beauty era. But it took a while. A lot of people say, like, what's the path to CMO? They're not linear. And if you look at other CMOs, LinkedIn, I mean, that's what's so cool about LinkedIn. You can see someone's literal career path, and they're always different. Mine came up through a communications PR route up to the marketing level, to the brand marketing side. It was a non-traditional path for sure.
Yeah. Do you think that you have to be passionate about the brand or the product to be a good marketer?
It depends on your definition of passionate. I think you have to admire the product. You have to understand the product. You could be passionate about food or travel. Doesn't mean you have to work for a hospitality company or a chef or culinary company. A product is a product. So you could do marketing for Bounty, paper towels, but damn, if they've got like a great pickup, some sort of cool claim, and you can come up with a cool story or something within pop culture, you can get into clean talk talking about it, or they've got an innovation because it's super sustainable and it's the new paper towel that's made out of recycled wood and all this stuff, and it's the first of its kind, you can become passionate about it. It's all about understanding what your product's point of difference is, what your brand's point of difference is, and how you storytell that. I love beauty. I feel very fortunate because I've always been a beauty junkie and I love makeup. But if I had to go work, not had to, if I had the opportunity to work for a different type of company, if you could unearth what that story is and what the point of difference is, I think you can be compassionate about that too in an unexpected way.
A lot of our Girl Boss audience is in marketing and would love to know how you got to where you are. How did you shift to this CMO role? How did you actually get the job at Rare Beauty?
So my first CMO role, I was chief marketing officer at Hourglass Cosmetics, and I was promoted into that role. So I joined the company as senior vice president, global marketing, and the founder after she promoted me, which was so wonderful. And I was so surprised. I remember just being like, oh my gosh, I hadn't asked for it. I was heads down working, and lo and behold, so I'm so grateful to her to this day. And then for Rare Beauty, I met the CEO and he said, Katie Welch, I sent you an email on LinkedIn and you never wrote me back. And I said, I don't know you. Hi. I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm so sorry. For those of you who know me, are not surprised. Sometimes I'm so heads down in work and I'm not checking LinkedIn and I missed it. And I'm so sorry. I apologize. So check your LinkedIn, respond to emails. That is my fatal flaw.
Hot tip.
So yeah, hot tip. You don't know who could be emailing you on LinkedIn. You know, you think about SEO and search, like make sure your LinkedIn has all the details because you never know who could be searching.
Yes.
And so he said, I'm working on something that you might be interested in. We ended up meeting and discussing. And I thought, oh, wow, what an incredible opportunity to help such a wonderful person bring her vision to life. and a cool team that she has had put together. So it was a great opportunity.
When you say she, we know you're referring to the Selena Gomez.
Yes.
What's it like working with Selena Gomez and having a celebrity as a boss?
She's awesome. She's kind, she's heartfelt, and she cares. She cares so much that it's the little things that she does can inspire bigger marketing moments. That's one of the things that I think is so cool. Like once we were talking about her morning beauty routine, this was when we were first starting. And she said, oh my gosh, one thing that I do was that I put affirmations on post-it notes and I put them on my bathroom mirror. The first thing to me that was striking, that was like, that's actually not part of a traditional beauty routine. You know, someone says, oh, then I moisturize, then I prime. But if you think about it, what makes Rare Beauty so different, in my opinion, is that it is sort of about that self-care of self-talk, the importance of self-acceptance and positive self-talk and positive self-worth. And that's step one. She puts post-it notes. And so that became something that's so core to the brand. It's something we called Rare Reminders.
Do I need to put post-it notes in my makeup bag now?
Yeah. Yeah. We just have them on our mirror. And says like,
I love that.
You are enough or you are rare. It's up to the individual. And so that was something that was cool. But so my point of bringing that up is here we were just having a normal conversation like friends or colleagues. And you forget that she is such a big celebrity because she comes into a room and you're just like, oh, it's like any normal, just another gal. So that's the best part about working with her is because she is so heartfelt and kind, and it feels like she's a member of the team.
Yeah. Is she really hands-on?
Yeah. She works very closely with our product development team and then works closely with me on the creative campaigns and how we bring it to life.
Which, by the way, and this is like not sponsored or anything, the products are amazing. In preparation for our conversation, I bought a lot of Rare Beauty, a full face worth.
Oh, thanks.
I'm carrying. You can probably hear them. This is some ASMR, Rare Beauty ASMR. I have a handful here, what I can fit in my hands. And I will say, this is like some of the best makeup. I've been converted. I'm not going to say the brand that I was loyal to before, but I was very loyal to another brand. And I use this daily. And I bought it with my own money.
Thanks. That's so meaningful. And I should have and would have sent it to you. So I apologize. But no, it's great. Thank goodness. We have a really talented product development team and a really talented founder. So together.
Yeah, magic.
Marketers, we're a dime a dozen. I'm like, all right, let's launch it. What should we do?
Yeah. And you've worked with multiple celebrity-led ventures. Does it make marketing easier or harder?
The most important thing is to determine your brand's why. So whether you're a founder who's not a celebrity, it doesn't matter whether they're a celebrity or you're not a celebrity. The most important thing is to understand the why they want to create this brand or why this brand exists, and then really unearthing that and then making sure that not only you and the founder, but the whole team understands it. So everything that we do is through that lens of why are we doing this? So it really is cohesive. The message breaks through. And so, yes, of course, it's wonderful that Selena has this powerful Instagram following and TikTok following and social following and a community and fan base who is so kind and respectful and highly engaged. It's amazing. But there's so much more. And I think what I've learned is how, because I meet people who are like, oh, I mean, now I think everyone knows it's Selena's brand. But in the early days, when we launched in September of 2020, maybe a few months into it, months later, some people didn't know. And that was always really exciting. So people came in through because they were beauty junkies and maybe they learned about the blush on TikTok, or they were really interested in mental health content. And so maybe they came into the brand through some of our Rare Impact work. And that's always been really fun, is to understand how people find out about the brand through Selena's Instagram. So I think marketing, you have to really think about all the entry points that someone can find, learn about your brand or come into your brand. And so how do you activate on that? Or how do you tap those other communities so that people can find out about your brand?
Whether you're a content creator, influencer, entrepreneur, or just someone trying to stand out from the crowd online, you're going to want to hear this. As an entrepreneur and content creator myself, I know making your mark on social media can be hard. That's why creating a standout personal brand through visual storytelling is the key to success. Easier said than done, you might be thinking. Think again. Enter Adobe Express, the all-in-one AI content creation app for the social-first era. And you don't have to be a professional designer or social media pro to use it, but people will think you are. Adobe Express has thousands of uniquely and professionally designed templates and fonts to help jumpstart your content creation journey, whether you're already a creative pro or just getting started. Plus, with Adobe Firefly generative AI technology, now built right into the Adobe Express mobile app, you can generate one-of-a-kind images, illustrations, animations, logos, and more. Using just a simple description, you can even insert, remove, or replace people, objects, and backgrounds in your photos with the touch of a button, creating the perfect image in seconds. Creating content on the go? I love using the Content Scheduler tool to plan, review, schedule, and publish to my social media channels directly from my phone, making it easier than ever to share standout content wherever, whenever. And the best part, the new Adobe Express tools are now available on mobile for all iOS and Android users. Head to the App Store to download today and get limitless creativity at your fingertips. You're listening to my chat with Katie, Rare Beauty's CMO. Next up, Katie shares her thoughts about influencer brand trips and whether or not it's too late to become a beauty influencer. Wait, one more thing. Don't forget to download and rate this episode. It helps more than you know. Also, I love hearing from folks that listen to the pod, so send me a DM on Instagram at Avery Francis so I can hear what you thought about this episode. Let's get back into it. So last time we saw each other, it was about a year ago, and we talked about a lot of things, the future of marketing, we talked about TikTok and dating. Where do you want to go next with this conversation?
Well, what has progressed the most? Probably TikTok. My dating life is still at a standstill.
We'll talk about all three.
It's
fine. We're going to get into it.
Listen, you got it. You got to, I don't know what you have to do, actually.
Let's start with Facebook and TikTok. I'm curious, Facebook or TikTok, where should brands be focusing their social media strategy? And I need you to pick one if you had to.
I am biased. I'm partial to TikTok because I have a community on TikTok that I love. And I love the opportunity that anyone can go viral. Anyone can create content. I think it gives people the opportunity to shine in their creativity. I'm a storyteller. So I love if someone can come up with a new way to tell a story about something, anything, and capture people's attention. I think that's really exciting. You don't have to have millions of followers. You can just break through.
How important are influencers to the growth of a brand?
Oh, I think crucial. And let me tell you why. Yes, of course, in their name, they influence purchase, but it's also they influence action. They influence opinion. And I think what's cool, back to sort of our first conversation of could you do marketing for any other brand? All industries have this idea of a key opinion leader or an influencer. The most important thing for a brand is to understand where are the conversations happening, not only about your brand, but about your category. And then is there a subculture? Is there a subcategory, a greater category that you can listen? First and foremost, like listen to the community. How are they talking? Who are the louder voices or who's driving conversation and how are they doing that? And you saw such a big beauty conversation happening on TikTok. And so that was a perfect opportunity to say, okay, there are people who are passionate about your industry or your category. Why wouldn't a brand want to engage with influencers? Because there are people that love beauty and you can learn from them. Not only can they, of course, help talk about your product, but I personally have such an affinity and a love and a respect for creators because I love beauty so much. And it's just fun for me to consume content, to consume more and more people who are talking about beauty. So as much as I love to still pick up a Vogue magazine and read what the beauty directors are talking about in print, I love to take it in TikTok. I like to consume it on YouTube and all of it. Because to me, it's just like, wow, there's so many people talking about this category. I think it's great. I don't think it's going anywhere. I think the people, those who influence who, that could probably change. The medium certainly can change. Look at TikTok, where that just came up in the last 4 or 5 years.
Yeah, and I think that there's so much criticism online and just in general of influencers and creators in general. And what you mentioned earlier is something that just clicked for me that I never thought of before. Like they really are the ones that are driving dialogue about products, brands, experiences.
Absolutely. It's a really interesting conversation around the state of marketing and how much it's changed in the last 20, you know, whatever. It changes every year. It changes the speed of culture. But we used to be able to just push out a message. There wasn't a two-way conversation.
Yeah, definitely. And I've been seeing more of that on TikTok. Is there a brand from another industry that you take inspiration from that would surprise someone listening?
I look at fashion brands a lot. The quick serve QSRs, quick serve restaurants, they always do really cool things. Taco Bell, McDonald's, Chipotle. I don't know if that's surprising, though. I think Oatly does really interesting marketing. I think what beauty people tend to do is they get stuck in beauty. and they like to follow what other beauty brands are doing. I do try to look outside of the beauty industry and just reading the trades and paying attention. I think the most important thing is just to pay attention to what the world that's happening around you and where is your attention going? Is your attention going to an ad? Is it going to an app, a content creator? Brands can even take notes from content creators and how content creators engage with their community. You can take a cue from a media company. You can take a cue from a car company. It's not so much a certain brand that's always doing it right. It's more like, that's a really cool way to engage with your community or tell a story. And so if you understand, back to the fundamentals of understanding what your brand is and what your product is and what the points of difference of both are and how you sort of engage in the world, then you're able to understand, okay, cool. I see why that car company did that, their strategic direction. And then you think about that through your own brand, that your own strategic lens, versus just saying, McDonald's did a meal with Travis Scott. We should do a collab with Travis Scott. Like, no, that's not the right thing. It's like, what did Travis Scott mean to McDonald's? So it's figuring out that same formula.
Do you think it's too late to become a beauty influencer since it's such a saturated space?
Wow, that's a great question. Because you know what I heard? Have you seen those stories of Gen Alpha, Gen Z? Like, it's a career path that people want to take, which that's so fascinating. And I don't even know how to wrap my head around that, because then I think I start to show my age. She's a real Gen Xer with this answer. But I think it's cool. I do think you have to still have your why. Why do you want to create beauty content? With anything, with any content creator, who is your audience and how are you bringing them value? How are you serving them? So I think if you want to be a creator, great. You should want to do it, not just for the free products and the trips. Because being a creator it's hard. That's the thing I don't think people realize. Your to-do list is never checked off. Work-life balance? No, your life is your work. It's actually the opposite of work-life balance. So you have to be pretty disciplined, I would think, to be able to say, okay, my phone's going off. I'm not going to go on the app. I'm not going to need to check my likes. That's tough. I think if you're in a corporate job, it's a little bit easier to say, okay, I'm going to shut my email. I'm going to turn off my phone. I'm going to focus on getting a good night's sleep. So saying, I want to be a content creator, think about your why, just like any other brand. You're starting a business. Why do you want to do it? What are you creating for your audience? What's your point of difference? And if you can sort of start to understand all of that, absolutely. And maybe don't go all in at first. Maybe just get your feet wet. Start to do it. See if you like it. See if you like the amount of work that it takes. Because you have to post, and that's pressure.
So what are your thoughts on influencer brand trips?
These brand trips have been happening forever. They used to be no one saw behind the curtain because you would invite beauty editors. Let's say you were launching a new perfume and there was a fragrance house in France or somewhere the field where the lavender grew. You would take editors, Glamour, Cosmo, Vogue, Lucky, my favorite back in the day. You would take the editors to the field of lavender and you could meet the farmer and the perfumer and all the things. And it would be this very luxe trip. It was a way to help the people who were telling stories about your brand learn about the launch of a product, learn the backstory of a product. And it was sort of a normal marketing tactic. And those trips continued to grow. How they evolved were in the attendees. Back to what we were talking about before, you still need to tell a story of a product or the story of your brand. Backdrop of that story happens to work somewhere other than, I don't know, wherever you're headquartered, New York or LA. You do a trip. And it's just the attendees now have millions of followers on TikTok. And so the story goes live. Where the story used to go live in Vogue, then 4 months later, when the September issue came out, now it goes live immediately. My thing is about brand trips. What's the reason? Why? You need to go to the lavender field? Cool. Like, that's important to me. So that, like, then all the content is in the lavender field and they're like, wait, this is so authentic.
Yeah. I read a New York Times article and it was titled Champagne, Caviar, Bora Bora, Are You Not Entertained? And I pulled a quote from it that I wanted to share because it kind of lines up with what you mentioned. And it just talks about how, like, this practice has taken new shape. But really, what people are really frustrated about is the cost, the money that's being spent. One individual said, I find it so interesting that people don't get outraged when they see the Super Bowl commercials or those Times Square's billboards.
100%.
Yeah. She added that these trips cost way less than the $7 million that companies have spent to reserve 30 seconds of advertising.
It's a marketing vehicle, but it's never been in people's faces so much, so directly this way.
So today it's April 16th, 2024. So if you're listening to this conversation in the future, you might know what happened. Right now, we don't know. But the popular TikTok app, it could be gone. And a lot of creators, influencers alike are really concerned about this. Are you worried about TikTok being banned? And if you are, what will this mean for marketing?
First of all, I hope it's not. If there is a true privacy security concern, of course, I worry about that. But I hope that they're able to come to a solution, however that may be. Honestly, I'm not informed enough probably about the politics behind it all, the legality of it all, to make it a truly informed answer and an informed opinion. But man, I hope it's not. We haven't really been talking about it like it is. But what I think is interesting, I was just in a meeting with some of our social team. And what I think TikTok did is the way it taught the team to think about how people pay attention, how people engage, what the storytelling levers are, levers that you can pull. Let's say it does go away. I will be crushed because we have an incredibly wonderful audience. I personally have a great audience that I love to give career advice to. But I think what we have learned in the way of storytelling, it has strengthened a muscle in my team to understand what's going to get people to pay attention to a product. It's something I don't think you could learn in school. It's something I don't think I could have ever taught. So I'm grateful for it in that, because listening to my team in a meeting just now and how they were so creative, and that same creativity will transfer to any other different medium. But it really, what it is, it's thinking about capturing someone's attention. And so TikTok has taught us that, for better or worse. And we can take that same skill and you can apply it to a 15-second spot, linear, streaming TV, whatever it is. You can apply it to a YouTube ad. You can apply it to an organic Instagram reel. If it does go away, of course, we'll be fine. But I do think we've learned an interesting skill set that we would have otherwise never learned.
Okay, so we have to get into dating.
Oh, God.
Just very quickly.
Can't we just talk about marketing?
Much easier to talk about marketing.
So much easier.
So you and I are both single. What's it like dating with a demanding career? I'm asking for everyone else that's struggling out there. We need to know.
Oh, my God. First of all, you got to get someone else on this podcast because I am no expert. I get questions a lot about work-life balance. How do you do it? All these things. And I don't think I do it very well. Take the time to think about what you want your life to look like. I don't think I took the time.
Mm-hmm.
And the interesting thing is no one really tells you that. No one tells you that.
That's the main problem. I think that when people see successful women, they're like, you need to find someone.
For sure.
Equally, if not more successful because of gender roles and all those things. And then you get wrapped up into finding someone that there's not boatloads of people that are like this. And then I think that you put unnecessary pressure on yourself to find a match when I had to untangle all these things over the last few years of being single myself. I'm just like, what is it that I actually want versus what people are telling me I should want and who I should be with?
That's a really good point. Yeah. Again, it's back to you. It's what do you want? And it's very easy to not think about that and to instead focus on, oh, nope, got to do these emails, got to do this, got to do this PowerPoint presentation. And that's been my learning curve. And that's why I think I finally realized that probably in my early 40s, like, wait a second, this is my life. I'm in control of it. I got to figure out what I want it to look like. I mean, they say everyone, it's nothing new. They say you're CEO of your life. And there's nothing more true, but we don't take the time to think about, okay, what do I really want it to look like? What do I want to feel? What do I want to feel when I wake up every morning? And then start to work towards that. And that is the most important thing. And you know what? You can climb a ladder and you can figure out, but you have to think about it and think about what you want. Because the truest thing I know is that time flies and it goes so fast. And man, I've had a great career. I am so lucky and so grateful. And I've had wonderful mentors and mentees and honestly, great relationships too. You know what's interesting? I really think it's in my getting to know Gen Z and having these conversations with them and the questions that they ask are so much around work-life balance. I thought to myself, wait a second. I don't think I would have asked that question when I was 22. I was 22 and I was like working.
Yes.
And Sex and the City was on TV, like literally on TV. It was not on Netflix. Like it was live Sunday night. We would go watch HBO. There weren't TikToks around like wellness. It just was not a conversation, which is so wild to me now. That now this idea of work-life balance, which I think is false, it's never 50-50, but it's more this idea of just being like anything in life, being aware of your thoughts and feelings, being aware of the world around you, being aware of your choices and your future versus just like doing it.
Yes.
And going through the motions.
Yeah, more intentionality.
That's 100% it, more intentionality. And I do feel like the Gen Z definition of ambition is different than Gen X. And I think they really think more, not to generalize, but here I am. They're more aware of work-life balance for the media they've consumed. Who knows? I don't know how. But it's made me ask those questions to myself and think about, okay, I want the same thing. Because guess what? I still have the rest of my life to live. And so in the last 5 years, I've been much more intentional and conscious. And like, I try not to email the team at 10 o'clock at night and be respectful of people's time and understanding. I kind of call it scheduled stress. I'm not going to stress about this right now because I can't do anything about it. I will stress about it tomorrow morning when I have more of an opportunity to control something or like make a difference. But right now at 10 p.m. at night, I got to turn my brain off. There is something to be said about experience and learning and being able to have lessons learned.
And perspective.
It's true. It's perspective. It is perspective.
Gen Z don't necessarily have the experience that we do, but they are learning from the experiences that we've had. And that's giving them a unique perspective that they're now sharing with themselves and with others. Yes. And they're practicing it.
And with others.
Yes.
Yeah. And I have learned just as much as they have learned from me for whatever TikTok platform, I have learned from them. I promise you. I promise you.
So before we wrap up, I'd love to hear from you. With the rise of short form content and fleeting attention spans, how do you see the future of storytelling within Rare Beauty's marketing strategy?
It's hard to predict because I think like anything, so much is, whether it's medium-based or trend-based, you have to just pay attention. So I think the future will always change. I think that's the definite, is that it will change. And the most important thing is to not rest on your laurels or think, oh, I understand how that works. I got this. You never got it. That's the thing with marketing. It just changes so much and you have to pay attention. So the future is continued attention.
Yeah. And you've talked about that a lot today. I want to thank you so much for your time.
Thanks, Avery.
Katie, where can people continue to keep up with your career and with everything that you're doing?
It's just Katie Welch, W-E-L-C-H, on Instagram, TikTok, LinkedIn, Twitter, X, all the things.
Amazing. Okay. Thank you so much for your time. And with that, we'll end the conversation.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. You're wonderful. This was so fun. Thank you.
And that's a wrap on my conversation with Katie Welch, Rare Beauty's Chief Marketing Officer. Tune in next week for another episode with a very special guest. And until then, leave a comment or send me a DM to let me know what you thought of my chat with Katie. This podcast is produced by Liz Guber and Victoria Christie and edited by Diego Domine. Until next time, keep blooming.